Well, we heard there about some of the news going on in Washington and in Louisiana that may affect all of us. We're going to turn now to some news that you've probably had to deal with in your own life or perhaps in the life of someone you know. I'm talking about cancer, which is still responsible for one out of every four deaths in this country, although the death rate has been declining for many types of cancer with rapid advances in treatment. Last week, we spoke with the head of the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston about the latest in cancer research. Today, we are joined by Dr. Edward Benz. He's president of Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Welcome to Here and Now.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, why are so many people still dying from cancer in 2014? I see that about 585,000 Americans are expected to die from cancer this year, 1,600 a day.
Yes. You know, cancer is an incredibly common disease. That's why people are dying from it. Cancer is a disease for which the biggest risk factor of all is aging, and we're an aging population, so the incidence of cancer is rising. As our environment becomes more and more complicated with foreign substances, that's an important cause of cancer. There's still too much tobacco use, and we could probably cut those cancer deaths by nearly half if we simply banned tobacco. So environmental influences and age of the population. I will say, however, that while the cancer deaths are high, they have been declining at a rate of about 2% a year, which doesn't sound like much, but that's twice as fast as it was just 15 years ago.
And what's the reason for that decline?
I think there are several reasons. One is we do use less tobacco, and that is a major reason. The second is we have some better ways, like mammography, even though that's controversial, of picking up cancer at an earlier and more curable stage. The third is that we do have better treatments. We don't have magic bullets that cure cancer, but we do have treatments that make many forms of cancer manageable now and compatible with long-term survival.
And you're right there on the front lines at Dana-Farber. Tell us about some of the most incredible advancements that you've seen in recent years that are helping to bring these numbers down.
You know, the last 15 years, we've learned more about cancer than we had learned in all the decades of cancer research up until then. And the reason was the completion of the Human Genome Project. That technology allows us now to interrogate the individual patient's cancer at the level of its root cause. And the root cause of all cancers are changes in the genome that cause some genes to go bad and to drive those cells to grow when they shouldn't grow. So we can get to that root cause now, and we've already developed dozens of new drugs that are not like the carpet bombing of chemotherapy. They're much more like smart bombs that attack those specific abnormalities in the individual patient's own tumors, personalized medicine. Very, very exciting. I think the other thing that's really exciting that's come out in just the last 2 years, in fact, one of these drugs was just approved about a month ago, and that's immunotherapy. We've always known that our immune systems are capable of rejecting our tumors, but they don't. And we've learned a lot in the last 10 years about why they don't. And the reason they don't is that the tumors are very clever. They know how to suppress and to trick our immune systems. We've begun to find out what that bag of tricks is and develop drugs that get around it.
I've also heard about the introduction of a high-tech microscope that costs millions of dollars but really makes a difference.
Yes. You know, to see the inner workings of a cell at the molecular level, where the actual molecules are causing that cell to behave the way that it does, usually we had to use devices that would only work on slices of a dead cell. So the cell was not working when we're looking at it. We had to sort of figure out what those molecules might be doing. This microscope allows us to actually look in real time inside a living cell at a level of resolution that's almost down to single molecules. It's extraordinary. So we can see what these misbehaving genes are actually doing now in that living cell. We're not going to have to try to guess what it might be doing from a slice of a dead cell.
And why are these advances coming so quickly now?
I think there's a number of reasons why advances are moving more and more quickly. One is the technology, whether it's technology in terms of biological instrumentation or technology and the ability to process huge amounts of data, taking advantage of the revolution in computing. So we were once a very data-poor field of research, worked very hard to get one interpretable piece of data. Now our problem is we can get so many data points that we have to use computing technology to figure out which ones are the most important. But that is causing us now to have a flood of new information.
Of course, to some patients who are struggling with cancer, they may think these advances aren't coming nearly fast enough.
If you're someone with cancer, the advances can't come fast enough. We want to bring this technology into clinical practice much faster. It used to take 10, 20, sometimes 30 years for a discovery to actually be translated into useful therapy. The timing is still too long, but that has shortened considerably. There are some drugs on the market right now being used that are attacking targets we didn't know about 5 years ago. We'd like to shorten that time frame even more.
You mentioned chemotherapy as a carpet bombing approach. Do you think 10, 15, 20 years from now, chemotherapy is going to be much less common?
I think the kind of chemotherapy that we usually think about that was in practice in the 1980s and 1990s and is still even in use today will become much, much less common. There'll be a much greater use of these so-called targeted therapies. But it's important to keep in mind that those traditional chemotherapies in the right patients and in the right circumstances can be quite effective. And part of the revolution in using this technology is finding out who are those patients, because if they're going to work in those patients, we should use them. But we should not be using them in patients who aren't going to get a benefit from them but will get the toxicity.
It's Here and Now, and if you're just joining us, we're talking about the latest in cancer treatment and research with Dr. Edward Benz, president of Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. And Dr. Benz, you mentioned earlier that there's been a lot of controversy over cancer screening and whether Americans are screened too little or perhaps too much. What do you think?
I think this issue of screening and all of the controversies that you hear about it sometimes doesn't emphasize what I think is the essential point, which is screening works. The problem is, how many people do you have to screen to pick up not just the one person who might have a cancer, but the one person who might have a cancer that would otherwise kill that person? And do you have a treatment that would cure the person if you picked it up at that stage? So it's really getting down to how many people do you have to screen to save a life? And that's where things like the mammography controversy or the controversy around the PSA test for prostate cancer or screening with CT imaging for lung cancer gets so complicated. I think that the future and the not-too-distant future will be, we will be able to use other tests to pull out of the population those people at highest risk, where those screening tests will have the most effect.
Has the Affordable Care Act made any difference in what you do on a daily basis?
There have been several impacts of the Affordable Care Act on what we do. The good news is that everybody now is able to get health care insurance. And that causes people to get their health care earlier when they're healthy. It causes cancers to be picked up earlier. So it makes all the difference when one of our patients comes in and says, I have insurance. I'm not there as a so-called charity patient. And that's wonderful. However, the cost of health care is also being addressed by the Affordable Care Act. And there's a drive to lower health care costs. The system believes that academic health centers like ours are too expensive. And while we are working very hard to reduce our expense base, we do have some fixed things that make us more expensive.
Like what?
Like our support for research, for training. You know, comprehensive cancer centers in the United States take care of only 15% of cancer patients, but they train over 80% of the healthcare professionals who are specialized in cancer, be they doctors, nurses, pharmacists, social workers, or any of the healthcare professions, and clearly research. A lot of what would provide clinical operating margins in other hospitals, we reinvest, as do many of our peer institutions, back into research that's driving these new treatments. So the Affordable Care Act, I think, is going to have to evolve over time to understand how we support that research and education without necessarily having it inflate the cost base for all of healthcare.
You've talked about the research that you are doing. What about all the research that the government has been doing? How important has that been to the advances that we're seeing now in cancer care?
Well, the government is the major supporter of cancer research at all of our institutions through the National Institutes of Health. So, you know, 2/3 to 3/4 of the National Institutes of Health budget are actually spent in the form of grants that go out to institutions like ours. So we're in a partnership with the federal government to do this. And without it, the infrastructure for research around the country would collapse.
Dr. Benz, what is the next big breakthrough to come, do you think, in cancer research and cancer care?
I believe the next big breakthrough in cancer research will be the development of what we call personalized or high-precision cancer medicine, where we're able to configure the care and choose the drugs that we use to treat a patient's tumor on a highly individualized basis based on the specific genome abnormalities that are present in that patient's cancer. I think what will flow from that is the ability to prevent metastasis of the tumor, because that's what kills most cancer patients, no longer the primary tumor that we diagnose, but the spread of the cancer to other organs. And I think the research is going in the direction of being able to target those phenomena, and that's what's going to change that death rate we talked about.
When will we have that?
Well, if I knew that, I could probably run the National Cancer Institute. I don't know. I think the progress will always feel incremental. Remember, there are 400 forms of cancer, so we're not talking about attacking one disease. We're talking about taking down well over 400 diseases. But I think in the next decade, you're going to see significant improvements in survival in some of the more common forms of cancer. We've seen some hints of that already in the last 2 or 3 years. But I think we're going to be in this journey for a few more decades before cancer is totally eradicated.
Dr. Edward Benz, president of Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be here.